Welcome to the PHA-TBH weekly COVID-19 call. My name is Sunny. I'll be your operator for today's call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. During the question-and-answer session, if you have a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I will now turn the call over to Patrice Mayo. You may begin.
Good morning, everyone. This is Patrice Mayo, Vice President for Operations in the Safety Center and at PHA, and I'd like to welcome everyone to today's bi-weekly PHA-TDH COVID-19 call, and I'd like to turn it over to Dr. Mary Margaret Phil.
Hi, everybody. Good morning and happy Friday. We have just a few updates to share today. To start with, I want to provide a few updates on data and on our website. As hopefully everyone is aware, we update our data every day at 2 p.m. We have added a few additional data points to the website that may be of interest, especially to this group. And I can send out links through THA afterwards to be shared. But starting yesterday, we actually added a feed from the Hertz data, which all of you report into, and again, we're incredibly appreciative of that, which shows the statewide number of COVID-19 hospitalized patients, both confirmed positive cases and pending cases. So this is not able to be broken down to any level less than the statewide number, but I do think it's informative to monitor and see that trend, and probably also helpful for all of you or for some of your partners that might not have access to Hertz to be able to watch that. I also want to give everyone a heads up about our data today, as there's going to be some changes in the numbers that are reported. So we will actually be adding probable cases into our total case number starting today. There's been a lot of discussion around this nationally, certainly with leadership in Tennessee, and ultimately, Governor Lee and the Unified Command Group felt that it was appropriate to add those cases into our cumulative case count. So we anticipate seeing a larger than expected bump in cases today, but there will be about 200 probable cases added into that number for the first time. We will break down on the full sort of data output that we share daily, still the number of laboratory confirmed and probable cases, and then confirmed and probable deaths as well, so that people can still see that delineation. We are also reformatting a bit how we report our lab results. So to date, our total number of laboratory tests conducted has been a bit of a mismatch because we recognize that there are people that may have been tested for COVID-19 multiple times, people that might have had multiple positive tests. And right now in our laboratory testing numbers, those individuals are only counted one time. Going forward, they will still only be counted as a case once, but they will, every single individual test conducted on different dates will be counted individually. So there are several thousand, I think actually close to 30 or 40,000 tests, a mixture of positives and negatives that were rolled up into the same number, basically. And so this is going to be, I think, a much more accurate representation of the testing that's truly happening, regardless of how many times people have been tested. To reiterate, this is only PCR tests. We are not reporting any antibody tests, although we are monitoring and tracking that data separately. So again, today we'll see an increase in our number of cases with the addition of probables, as well as an increase in our number of tests conducted because of that parsing out each individual test that's being conducted. So I just wanted to make everyone aware of that change today. I believe a press release is going to go out from our office with some clarification around that, and some FAQs have been added to our data website around that as well. So I'm happy to also answer questions at the end, but just wanted to make everyone aware of that. I did, along the same lines of data and reporting, we have fielded some questions in the last few days around Hertz reporting and whether that still needs to be 7 days per week. I recognize that this is a big burden and ask for your staff and teams, and we're incredibly appreciative of the work. However, we really do need that information to be updated 7 days a week. We're currently seeing a pretty big drop-off over the weekends, but then it's backdated on Monday. And people are looking at this data every single day, and so it makes it a little bit challenging to interpret when a big chunk of our hospitals don't report their patients over the weekend. The federal requirement is that we report 7 days a week, so it's really important that we get these data daily if possible, and also just helpful for us and our metrics. As many of you may have seen, you know, we are seeing a slight increase in the number of cases across the state. You know, to some degree, that is not unexpected, as many restrictions have been lifted and people are interacting more. This is a disease that spread from person to person, and so, excuse me, when people are interacting more, we certainly anticipate that there will be some increased transmission, but this is all the more reason that now is the time that we really need to be vigilant about our data and reporting so that we can really understand trends as they're happening, especially for our healthcare facilities and healthcare system strain. That HERTS data is really important for us to start to see alarming trends or concerns if we have to worry about you know, strain in hospitals in certain parts of the state. And so again, as we've seen this slight increase in case numbers in some jurisdictions, that increase has been more impressive than in others. All the more reason that we really need to lean in and continue to stick to the reporting methods that we've been doing such a great job with for so long, so that we can really rely on that data to alert us early before there's a problem. And then lastly, I just want to mention two sort of bigger initiatives related to long-term care facilities that I'm sure many of you are aware of or there have been questions about. So the first is related to the ongoing weekly testing in long-term care facilities. As everyone knows, the Board of Health Licensure passed a rule now, I guess, a couple of weeks ago, mandating weekly testing of nursing homes in alignment with the CMS guidance. I recognize that many of you have reached out on trying to understand what that protocol and procedure is going to be, especially as many of you are supported by the State Public Health Lab for that one-time census testing that was conducted. We are furiously working to try to finalize procedures. I will say that, you know, the options, the preferred options 1 through 5 are going to be that nursing homes utilize existing relationships with commercial laboratories. You know, our State Public Health Lab is happy to support for this one-time testing effort, always happy to support in situations of outbreaks or clusters in facilities. But I think we have to think long-term about sustainability of these efforts. And so, you know, committing to do weekly testing of staff in hundreds of nursing homes across the state uses up a lot of our really important capacity in the state lab for some of those more urgent situations. So we really are going to prefer that people utilize existing contract relationships. As we've discussed, the state will pay for this testing. And so, you know, regardless, you know, we are happy to support that, and if we can utilize those existing mechanisms, that will be helpful. We are working with a couple of different vendors who have developed basically home testing kits whereby people can perform self-collected nasal swabs, put it in a box, and ship it back to the lab for testing. These are FDA, EUA-approved laboratories, part of the delay in getting this guidance out is that we're trying to finalize some of those procedures because that is also going to be an option for facilities to utilize for this weekly staff testing. The details are still being ironed out, but again, the beauty of it is that it removes the need for personal protective equipment, for shipping of specimen collection materials, for many of the other sort of logistical challenges and testing, especially from the State Public Health Lab, and allows people to collect their own swab, send it back in, and then results are available on a web-based portal, generally within 24 hours of the specimen being received. So this is something that we're excited about. Again, folks at TEMA and others are working furiously to finalize contracts and determine what inventory will be available to us sort of ASAP, because we recognize this might be a much easier mechanism for many of you. So that will hopefully be coming out early next week, and we will certainly be available to answer questions and help clarify and support however we can. The next initiative that I wanted to mention, which there has been even more attention around in the last few days, is the new long-term care facility visitation guidance. I'll also send the link to Patrice at THA so that she can send this out, but that guidance is now posted on our website. I believe HLR sent it out to facilities across the state late yesterday evening, but outlines the different visitation options and some of the prerequisites that were mentioned by the governor and Commissioner Piercy earlier this week. I think a few highlights to mention, this is completely voluntary. There's no requirement that facilities partake in this option. In here, it clearly states that facilities must abide by sort of a threshold that we've set for sort of determining stable disease transmission in a community. So we have created a metric that is now also available on the website, and I'll send that link out too, assess the average number of new cases reported over the last 14 days and then adjust that for population. So it's a rate. It's the number of new cases per 100,000 persons. And that threshold is going to be is less than 10. So counties that have more than 10 new cases per 100,000 persons reported on average over the last 2 weeks will not be allowed to offer visitation because there is concern of a higher degree of community transmission in those parts of the state. So this information is available in kind of two versions. There's an EPI curve that really shows the number of new cases reported daily by county with a drop-down where you can select your county. And then also a map that just shows kind of an overview snapshot of the state and the counties that are above that threshold. And right now, I'll have to pull it up and look at it. I believe there are 8 counties that are above that threshold. Let me see if I can actually get to it, and I can tell you what they are. Bedford County, Bedford County, Rutherford County, Davidson County, Robertson County, Shelby County, Macon County, Putnam County, and Unicoi. So those are the counties that will be above the threshold and therefore not at this time allowed to start visitation. And that's the part that our sort of EPI team will be managing more closely. So especially if there are questions around that piece, we're happy to discuss them. Otherwise, the full testing guidance or visitation guidance is available on the website, outlines the 3 sort of main options for visitation. Again, since this is all optional for facilities, you can pick and choose from that menu what works best for your facility. But I think the idea was, you know, really to try recognizing that in many parts of the state we have low community burden of disease, you know, trying to provide an opportunity for families to see loved ones if they haven't in quite some time in a way that is still safe and controlled. So I think that's all I have. I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Keaton for a few updates that she has around infection control and prevention.
Thanks, Dr. Phil. So again, I'm Amelia Keaton. I am the acting director of the Healthcare-Associated Infections Program. So understandably, we've received a lot of questions about the visitation guidance that was just released. One of the big questions that we've received and that is something that we are actively working on creating guidance for is how to handle other individuals maybe who have been restricted from entering nursing homes, so non-essential employees such as beauticians and chaplains and also people like volunteers. Hopefully that guidance will be out soon. Just wanted to acknowledge that we hear you. We know that is a question that a lot of folks are fielding. So hopefully have some more guidance to share with you as soon as possible there. In terms of infection prevention and control guidance, really no big changes this week. Just reemphasizing to continue to check back with CDC, regularly to make sure that there is no big changes to guidance, but, from our end, we haven't seen any big changes in recommendations. We are seeing some improvement in the availability of PPE. One of the things that we have run into increasingly are really prolonged use of N95 masks and use of N95 masks that haven't been fit tested. So I think one thing that we just try to reinforce whenever we speak to healthcare facilities is that industrial level N95 masks that have an exhalation valve on them don't provide source control in the way that a traditional surgical N95 mask or N95 mask designed for healthcare would. You know, the idea of those masks is that they protect the wearer from particles in the air, but they, allow for exhalation of the wearer's respiratory secretions and droplets, with the idea of it being, easier to wear. And unfortunately, that's not appropriate for healthcare settings, because obviously some of the role of those masks is to protect others from your respiratory secretions as well. Another kind of important point is to continue social distancing, even if you're wearing masks at all times, which we hope people are still continuing to do. I know that this has been going on for several months now, and it's often difficult to remember some of those practices, but even though things are opening up outside, there's still transmission of COVID-19, and it's really important to try to maintain that 6-foot minimum distance between yourself and others. We are continuing our work with long-term care facilities. We've performed about 100 formal infection prevention and control assessments, and obviously countless other general inquiries that we've responded to. Again, some of the findings there, I think, reflect a shortage of PPE, a shortage of supplies for hand hygiene, and it's our hope that some of those shortages are starting to improve. So we'll keep you posted on any additional guidance there. But I think from my side of things, that is it. So Dr. Phil, unless you have any other issues or items to bring up, we can turn it back over to Patrice.
Nope, I'm good, thanks.
Okay, operator, we're ready for questions, if you'll please open the line.
Thank you. If you have a question, please press star then one on your touch tone phone. If you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the pound sign or the hash key. There will be a delay before the first question is announced. If you're using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, please press star then one on your touch tone phone. We are on standby for questions. And once again, that's star then one on your touch-tone phone. And we have no questions at this time.
Okay, if there are no questions, then we will wrap up today's call. I'd like to thank Dr. Keaton and Dr. Phil for the updates. We'll look forward to receiving the resources and links that you identified, and we will be sending those out to the group. Again, I'd like to say thank you to the Department of Health for providing these biweekly calls, which I know have been a great resource and support to hospitals statewide. Our next call will be Friday, June the 26th. Thank you very much.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.